Hey, everybody. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, and right now it's a duet because I'm joined by Daryl Loomis.
It's like Sonny and Cher.
It is. It's like Tubbs and Crockett. So
Cagney and Lacey.
Yes. Boy, have you ever seen Cagney and Lacey before?
Oh, I used to watch it when I was a kid. I actually, I was watching something recently. I started watching the third season of American Horror Story, okay. And one of the actresses in a small role, is Cagney. And I recognized her distinctly, and I couldn't place it until I looked her up, and it's Cagney.
Nice. I think I, like, reviewed a Cagney and Lacey made-for-TV movie or something.
No, it's very possible. I mean, it was, like, 1987. It's, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so. Anyway, I'm sure that's what people are tuning in.
Of course they are.
Cagney and Lacey talk. Friday Filibuster with all your Cagney and Lacey talk. So we're expecting Mac at some point. I will dial him in if he shows, so we won't deny our listeners their Mac helpings. But before we get going, Daryl, I did want to follow up on the movie that we were all kind of really looking forward to when we last chatted, which was on our summer movie preview, and that movie has since launched to near universal acclaim. Yeah. Maybe not quite the box office craziness, though I guess it's the staying power is pretty good, but that is, of course, Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, it was a little.
Which you have not seen yet.
I have not seen yet, but I was a little irritated to note that Pitch Perfect 2 beat it at the box office.
Now, there you go.
What does this world come to?
Well, isn't that ultimately the ultimate? I was going to say something like the ultimate expression of feminism that would make me sexist. So, I don't know.
To me, it's a sign of the true apocalypse.
That's right.
So I
would say that's counter programming. I mean, that is pure counter programming, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's safe to say the Mad Max audience and the Pitch Perfect audience don't really overlap. There's not really.
Yeah, that Venn diagram is tiny.
The Venn diagram is very skinny. Very skinny. But I did see Mad Max, and I did love it, like everybody else, it seemed. You know, and let me just touch on this. Well, first of all, action was awesome. I think I've long held that the Road Warrior chase scene is, to me, like just under the Rage of the Lost Ark truck chase. That's one of my all-time favorite action sequences. And it's no coincidence that they both were entirely practical, obviously, you know,
right.
and included stuntmen risking their lives for my entertainment, and featured large trucks. Those are kind of like in my wheelhouse. Like, you hit those three check boxes, and I'm yours. But Fury Road, I will say, does have CGI, so don't be fooled in thinking it's CGI free.
But
so
there's some not a CGI, lot, right?
But not a lot, and it definitely feels more organic. I read a review comparing it to like Ultron, where, you know, the enemies in Ultron were just kind of CGI robots with no weight to them, and you know, there were actual flesh and blood antagonists in Fury Road, and their deaths may have been CGI enhanced, but it definitely felt grounded and real. And for sure, much of the chase sequences were done for real. So it was totally thrilling from start to finish.
Yeah, I intend to see it this weekend. My friend who I normally go out to lunch with on Saturday mornings or Saturday afternoons is out of town on business. And so I don't have that monkey on my back. And so I have a good chance of actually going to see it because Albuquerque apparently hates 2D, and I don't want to see it in 3D. Two Saturday showings.
Yeah, 3D was available for us too for more convenient times. Like the times for the 2D I wanted to go see were like 5:40 and 10:50, and there was a midnight show. It's like, boy, are they that upfront about trying to get me to spend more money? You know, on the
right? 3D? It's ridiculous. I mean, at the cinema near me or relatively near me, it's 11:45 and 3:15. I think are the two 2D showings. And while I'm fine with an 11:45 showing of a movie, that's all I got.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. And I can't do that on a Wednesday.
I would think 3D would be too much of a migraine. There's just so much going on. Like, I need to go see it again just to kind of soak up the nuances of the action because there's just so much happening. You know, like George Miller's action, like, there are stories being told within the action, and there are these beats and gags that you'll miss one time through, you know?
Well, and if he was unsuccessful his entire career, you know he showed that in Babe, Pig in the City 2.
And I don't know if you're being facetious or not, but those are great movies, Babe and Babe 2.
You know, I've had a 10 or 15... I finally, eventually watched Pig in the City 2. And I like it. I can accept it completely. I didn't know it was George Miller for Agent, but...
I feel like Babe to me is a top 10 movie and like one of the great kids movies ever made. And like speaking of practical effects, kind of like, you know, just a how-to guide on to make movie magic. I have always
fair enough. Babe.
So okay, again, digression, but I did want to touch on one kind of flashpoint which has become like a real pain in the butt, tedious thing that, you know, extremes on both sides of political whatever are seizing on. That's this feminism in Mad Max, right? Mad Max is a feminist movie. You know, you hear that, right? Like, and then you got one side, like I've read some men's rights group was vetoing it. I've never heard of them. I don't know what their deal is.
Yeah.
But, you know, give me a break. And then I just saw a headline for a Guardian piece today, you know, take that for what it's worth, saying that, you know, like men fear Mad Max because it threatens to take down the patriarchy or something. And it's like, God, you know, and you know, please, and to me, and so I did kind of go on wondering, like, am I going to get just like, you know, are the spiky cars going to be zooming around with Hillary 2015, you know, 2016 bumper stickers or something? Is it going to be the straight political statement? I found it to be like an awesome, like really, and it was strong women, strong female characters, independent, fierce for sure. But instead of them just kind of undercutting the men, you know, like Charlize Theron never like emasculated Max, right? She never like kneecapped him or did it, you know, like they formed, it was at first antagonistic, but they really formed a partnership that was, dare I say, like a great, like very traditional, like, you know, boy, I almost thought that there's a healthy marriage for you right there, you know? They were just like very, they complemented each other. You know, Mad Max. And you can see George Miller kind of made it a point to do this. Like, he and Furiosa get into a fight. Mad Max comes out on top of that fist fight, you know, which is to be expected. He's Mad Max and whatever. But, you know, Furiosa always shows that she's like a great driver. She's extraordinarily resourceful. She's more perceptive of things than Max is at some points. So it's never like, I don't know, they're never kind of like jockeying and battling each other out in some kind of battle of the sexes. They both kind of bring things together and make each other better characters, which I found, frankly, like, refreshing and thrilling, because Hollywood does not do that.
No, and I'll tell you, not to go back to Babe, Pig in the City. Well, to go back to Babe, Pig in the City. My friend who was always a big fan of the movie, a close friend of mine, and I had this feud about not wanting to watch it because it sounded so stupid, and I'm not a fan of kids' movies and that sort of thing. I'm a fan of different things. But in a Facebook post that I recently saw him write in regards to this very thing, he reminded people of, in Babe, Pig in the City, that George Miller basically made the farmer stay in the hospital the entire time,
right,
and have his wife and the pig save the farm.
Right.
So his response is, my friend's response is, whatever you think about that, he's always subversive, but he's an old white guy and can only say so much.
Okay.
So he's done. This isn't new for him to have strong female characters, I guess, is the point.
Right, and they were present. Like, the Road Warrior had a very strong female character. You know?
Yeah, I mean, with all of the men's rights groups and stuff complaining about it, I'm not going to take a political stance here on this, but for all the men's rights groups, whatever the hell that means, do they not remember Tina Turner in Beyond Thunderdome?
Right, right.
I mean, it's not new. This is not new. He's just, and this is the way George Miller works. And more power to him. You know, he writes his characters the way he wants to, and people interpret them the way they want to, and that's all fine. But having strong female characters in a George Miller movie is not a new thing.
And my point was, if this was a hack Hollywood director, you know, it would be like, you know, Katherine Heigl putting The Rock in a headlock, right? And there's your girl power.
Right, I mean? Right, right.
So, I mean, right. Just something real lazy. Like, so her strength as a woman comes from, you know, like beating down a man, right? And so
right.
this was just cool in that it was not that. And in fact, you know, Max starts out very animalistic in the movie. I'm not going to get into much of it because we haven't seen it yet. But he really does find some purpose when he connects with Furiosa. And likewise, so they are both kind of, they make each other better people, you know?
Yeah, God forbid two people together make each other better.
Exactly. And it's like, right, exactly. And so,
regardless of gender, I mean, it doesn't, like, the focus on the genders shouldn't make any difference compared to two characters who make each other better.
I agree. And to me, that's probably the ultimate subversion in the Hollywood hackery that George Miller does. And take into account, this is a post-apocalyptic wasteland, right? So it's not like there's, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to draw a parallel to that, you know, to this action fantasy, to, like, every, you know, everyday life. There are, so, like, I just get annoyed when people, like, seize on these things for political purposes, right, and blow them out. And either,
well, and for headline purposes more than anything.
Absolutely. Clickbait garbage for people who probably weren't going to see it anyway. So, I don't know. So,
anyway. I got caught on clickbait. I've read about more of this movie than I should have, having not seen it. You know, so I understand the whole, what's going on with the quote-unquote controversy, although it's no controversy to me.
It's not. Like, it's not a controversy, and it shouldn't be shocking, especially anyone familiar with Miller. And it's not like Max is marginalized either. Like, he mixes it up.
Called Mad Max Fury Road.
He is a badass. He is awesome. And he's never, like, a passenger in this movie. You know, he's not. And like, that was actually, the trailers seemed to make it like that, right?
A little bit.
That was a little worried, and I was a little worried. I was like, well, you know, give me some Max action here, you know. And so, but regardless, I found it an exciting, like, it was a badass movie, like 2 hours of unrelenting action, for starters. But I just thought there was some really sly subversion going on here, and I thought it really made some. I thought he, in his own way, he made some great statements about this kind of interconnectedness between men and women, you know, and
sure.
Perish the thought that that's so controversial. So that's,
and, you know, and this is to go, this goes back to an old favorite movie of mine, Hardware. That's a, you know, it's also a post-apocalyptic movie. It doesn't feature just to briefly recap, the boyfriend is a scavenger and brings this crazy robot head to his girlfriend, who lives in a mansion, or like a secluded area in the post-apocalypse, where she's protected, but she does metal art, and he brings crazy metal stuff to her, and the movie winds up becoming the robot versus the woman in this tiny apartment. But I know I said mansion earlier, but you know how it goes. But the idea that this guy and this lady are, they work off each other. This is not new.
Right.
This isn't, I mean, I'm not married, but married people know this.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is how this works.
Exactly. And last thing about this, it really brought to mind one of my all-time favorite kind of female characters, Ellen Ripley in Aliens, you know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
So, you know, Ripley help me out. Why am I blanking on Bean's character's name?
I have a hard time with character names.
Right.
But Bean's character, yeah.
But Ripley and Hicks is another example. Like, those are two, you know, they're kind of equal footing. They complement each other, you know.
And like, they both kick ass,
and, like, I just thought that was pretty cool.
I guess Aliens and Beyond, and Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, or Alien Beyond, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, came before the men's rights movement.
I know, right.
So,
men's rights groups, spare me. Hardcore, whoever, tearing down patriarchs, spare me. Neither of you care about the movie, and you're just looking to, I don't know, make your 50 minutes of fame, 2 minutes
late,
or whatever. So I'm just here to say, ignore that controversial stuff. The movie is awesome. The characters are just strong and independent and like, rise above petty gender politics. I'll just put it that way. So I cannot wait to see it again. So that's that. That's all I'll say about that. Okay.
All right.
Now,
so
speaking of insane and over the top and craziness, we're going to just riff for this last few minutes of this podcast. This will be a special abbreviated post-Memorial Day podcast. But I've talked about this show a bit. And I sent it to Daryl for him to take a look at. And that is Banshee. Cinemax's Banshee. And it's actually, I actually called it, it was a couple years ago when the first season aired. And it had aired alongside the second season of Strike Back. And I reviewed both of them that year. And I realized that two of the best TV shows I had seen in 2013, I guess, were Cinemax original productions.
Which is nutty.
Which is nutty. But I did. So you did receive Banshee.
I did receive Banshee. I watched the first season twice, which should tell you something. And then I have since watched the second through the second season.
Okay, interesting. All right.
I haven't downloaded the third. I haven't watched the third season yet because I wanted to take a short break and watch the third season of American Horror Story, which I'm about halfway through now. So I'll get back to Banshee pretty quick. But Banshee's an awesome show to just start it off.
Yeah, right. It's bat bleep. You know,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
In the best way possible. It reminds me
and consciously
of,
so and
consciously. Unlike so, you've got so you take two shows, and they're both full of. They're massively full of violence, and there's a ton of sex in both of them. There are ridiculous things going on all the time. One takes itself really seriously, and one recognizes that it's totally ridiculous.
That it's pulp.
And it's complete pulp.
Right.
And you've got Banshee and Game of Thrones.
Ah, yes. Your Game of Thrones. In a nutshell. Right.
Game of Thrones is such a self-serious show, I basically don't want to watch it anymore. I'm almost done with it. I watched the previous episode. I'm just almost done with it. Banshee, I can't wait to watch the next season.
Which is awesome.
I can imagine, because, and I'll get to that, because I'll get to what the deal with that is. But Banshee reminds me of... So I'm a comic book fan.
Right.
I'm currently in the midst of working on a comic book for publication.
Oh, excellent.
Been going on for way too long, but that's neither here nor there. But I'm not a superhero fan. I'm a fan of action comics, a fan of noir comics, murder comics. David Lapham is my favorite comic writer / artist. And he writes noir crime comics. They're rough. They're sometimes emotional, but they're very, very hardcore. And Banshee reminds me of one of those action comics. This could all be on a comics page and fit perfectly. It's so pulpy. It's so full of violence. But it's almost all, not completely, but almost all fisticuffs.
True.
And I really appreciate that. And that comes to a head in the second season. With my favorite thing, and this goes back to what we're talking about with Fury Road as well, there are no weak women in Banshee.
That's true.
Everyone, even, what's her name, the niece of the
right.
Amish
right.
mafioso.
Keep going. Rebecca.
Rebecca, yeah. And she's in
super,
True Detective.
A super hot Native American assassin.
Yeah, she's rad. I don't remember her name offhand, but she's red, although not Native American in real
right.
life, but whatever. But even Rebecca, who seems sort of, she's Amish at the start and gets cast out, but she's naive at first, but she winds up having a pivotal moment at the end of the second season in which she kills... the head of the Native American tribe.
Spoiler alert, correct.
Second season. If you're in my boat, then tough. But she comes through strong as hell, and this all comes to a head in what is my favorite co-scene. It's edited together and actually edited really well. I was really impressed. I've been really impressed with the editing of the show. Is the dual fight between so. There's one scene, Anna is in jail and has to prove her toughness to the tough prison lady. And so they're in this hardcore fight. And it intercuts with Siobhan, the sheriff's deputy, who is being confronted by her abusive ex-boyfriend and beats the crap out of him. There's definitely man-on-woman violence in this, but
oh, right.
In this scene, she comes out far on top, where he's just out cold, and you haven't seen him since. And it's these two scenes where it's like three of the four characters are women, and all three of them are complete badasses. And that's fantastic. I mean, there's nobody in this show who is dumb or, I mean, some of them are dumb, but poorly written. For as ridiculous as it is, it's a pretty well done show.
Sure.
And they do a
technical level. I mean, I think it's awesome anyway, but you can't argue its technical merits.
Yeah. I mean, it does a thing that, art that I really appreciate about Archer, where one character starts a sentence and another character in a different scene finishes that sentence for them and keeps going in a different conversation. It's a really nice flow. At the end of the second season, I was very happy to note that Chaitin, the monstrous yes. Native American pit fighter,
right.
is clearly going to be the big bad for season three.
And he is awesome. And season three is awesome. Like, I thought season one was just sublime pulp cinema. Season two, I did like a lot. I thought it was maybe a few degrees stepped down.
It's a little more
one.
Grounded. It's a little more grounded.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think there was... Well, there was one moment in season two that was just the best when it was Hood versus the assassin, the Irish assassin guy on the highway.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was great. I just felt like awesome. Like the first season and third season are kind of littered with like just awesome moments, and the second season just felt a little shy of that. Like first season, I'm thinking, you know, what jumps out at me is MMA episode, right? Like
yeah,
like when that episode dropped, I was like, oh yes. I mean, that's when it was like. Like this idea of a criminal masquerading as a sheriff, as ridiculous as that is, will yield unending awesome moments. You know,
And that's like an 8-minute fight.
It's an 8-minute, and it is brutal, right?
It's
it
brutal,
is like,
completely brutal.
I mean,
hands being torn, like fingers, like finger webbing being torn apart, and like
if you think about it, Daryl, it is a masterfully staged and executed fight. You know,
yeah.
Just how it builds, how like they get like crazier and crazier, right? And like more lethal as the fight goes on. And then Lucas just with the greatest line, you know, what did he say? Like, what was it? Like, same, the new boss, same as the old boss, right?
Oh, some, yeah, at the end of it. Yeah, because Siobhan, who's awesome.
Who's awesome.
Sees that he's going to go talk to the MMA fighter, and in context, the MMA fighter has just brutally raped a woman the night before.
Right.
And everybody knows it, and the promoter and the Amish mafia guy, they're all in it for this casino
right.
bid, and so they want to suppress it or at least wait until after the fight to do anything about it. And he walks up, he walks through the crowd, Lucas Hood, the sheriff, and Siobhan, who's pretty outspoken, is like, oh, you know, old boss, same as the new boss, because every sheriff has been under the checkbook of all these guys the whole time. And then there's this 8-minute hardcore fight.
Right.
And then it finishes with him repeating that line back to her. And that sort of gets is what gets the love interest going.
Yeah, great. Yeah, definitely. Great, great payoff there. Another highlight for me for that first season was the flashback episode of him in the prison with
mm-hmm.
the albino.
Mm-hmm.
That was just wild. So I don't know. It was, and then the third season, I'm not going to.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get into the third season this week.
So great.
But the other thing about in the second season, speaking on those kinds of hardcore fights, like justified, righteous hardcore fights, was Emmett after his baby was killed by the neo-Nazis who attacked his wife.
Right.
Goes to town on the neo-Nazis. Completely crushing dude's skull. Not the guy doesn't die, which I think is the funniest part of that whole scene, is that he's left to go. But his whole side of the face, his face is flattened. The show's willing to go so far over the top with its violence that, I mean, you can't condemn it for being too violent because it's comic almost.
Right. Although, I mean, yeah, that's true. But I will say that kudos to the actors who give it their all.
Oh, they absolutely do.
They, like, I mean, they're all, like, just awesome, you know. You know, the main, you know, so Hood is played by Anthony Starr, who I think is New Zealand or Australian.
Something like that, yeah, yeah.
And just, like, what a physical presence that guy is. I don't think he's very big, but he's just this, I mean, he's just...
He's believable. He's very believable.
That's right.
And he's a you know, and it's fighter. Interesting because he's New Zealand. He's a New Zealander or whatever. And Anne, the woman who plays Anna is Bulgarian. The woman who plays, the woman who plays the Native American assassin is Colombian. This is this large international cast, like all being like Central Pennsylvania folk.
That's right, yeah.
It's really funny.
Absolutely. And you get bikers in there. I mean, obviously, like, I actually find the Amish subplots I find to be actually quite interesting, you know, especially with Kai Proctor, you know, as the...
Kai, I kept forgetting his name.
And then obviously the stuff on the reservation. So, you know, those will come into place in third season for sure some more.
Well, you got Chayton.
Before I forget... Chayton, who's the man.
Chayton. And is it not hilarious that the big bad for a season is named Chayton?
Of course. That's how it's got to work. and before I forget, it's got to be said, I think Banshee might have my favorite opening credit sequences.
It's got a pretty good opening credit sequence. I really like True Detectives.
Well, to me, there's not much in the world that's better than True Detective in general, but Banshee's got a lot of Easter eggs. Like, the combinations mean something.
Okay.
Like, I believe, it was from my season one review, but something like one of the combinations tells you the body count for that season.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That's pretty cool. And so, like, and then the photos actually relate to the characters and stuff. So, and I like the song.
I like the song, too. And those guys, what are they called? Merciless Remorse or something? Methodical Remorse, I think. It's a two-man group, and they do a lot of trailers and stuff like that. And it's all electronic stuff, but it's really always nicely wrought. Always very impressed with what they've done. Methodic Doubt. Methodic Doubt is what they're called. And but one thing I like about Banshee 2 as Tiny Thing is that after the credits roll, there's always a little teaser.
Yeah, that's right.
Of something else. And it's not a what's coming up. It's another
it's a coda.
30 or 40 second scene.
Yeah, it's like a little coda. Like for, you know, that episode where, you know, Lucas fights the Irish assassin who gets awesomely decapitated by a skidding tractor trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for real. That, I mean, not for real, but that happens in the show. That's how awesome the show is. Like, the coda there is the camera pans and, I think, finds his head, right, in the
meadow
or something like that. So, yeah.
Well,
so,
at the end of the second season, if you don't stick around through the end, so it like shoots a big like banshee at the quote unquote end of the episode, and then it moves on briefly. And at the end of the second season, if you don't watch through that, you miss the fact that Chayton not only massacres a dude in a New Orleans pit fight,
but
finds out that it's time to go back home and take care of business.
That's right, and thus setting the table for season three. Which,
yeah, they know what they're doing.
They do. Only some bad news, unfortunately. Season four is going to happen, but they trimmed the episode order down to like 8 episodes.
Oh, really?
That's a bummer. But
it's only 10 for both, right? Or for at least the
I
first
think so.
Two, right?
Yeah, I think so. So it's all right. You could deal with that for sure. But yeah, it's just
and
a
I like
total surprise.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And they gave an hour and a half for the finale of season two,
right?
Which I was happy about.
And season three has It just has some like some all-timers in this, like some all-timer episodes for sure.
Well, and that's the great thing is because anybody who's seen the show but hasn't seen through there knows that Lucas Hood can't take Chayton Longshadow one-on-one.
Right.
Virtually nobody can.
That's right.
But maybe he does because I've seen Lucas Hood work before.
Yeah. No, that all pays off real nicely. It's yeah, there's lots of good stuff that awaits you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a very
probably again, this weekend. And yes, it is over the top. The, you know, the sex, the violence, all that stuff. But I will say that you'll get a surprise episode, like the one, like that surprisingly like sentimental with a light touch. Remember the one? So when Hood and Carrie go to that farmhouse. Remember?
Yeah.
Like, it's a kind of a very quiet episode. It ends with a sniper fire.
And it ends with a sniper fire and a house fire.
And a house fire. And actually a pretty awesomely staged sequence where they're creeping at each other through a cornfield.
Yeah.
To say. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But there's some real emotion in there.
That's right. Absolutely.
And that really sets off the hardcore sex and violence. And, you know, as you were talking about sort of your things that trucks and chases and that sort of thing that get you. I am sold, and I hand it to you, Dave, for, you know, sending me this show that you clearly knew I would like.
Yeah, it was a layup.
It's a layup, because the things that I like, and they're more general than that, but if you give me hardcore violence, lots of sex, and creative cussing, I'll totally watch your stuff.
There you go. So now
totally
you know,
watch it.
Yeah, so now you know the gateway to Daryl's Heart. So that's right.
Yeah, that's where Wild at Heart is my favorite movie of all time.
Excellent.
Yeah, looking very much forward to season three. I'm going to finish American Horror Story season three before I get back to Banshee, but just because I needed a break from the characters a little bit.
Yes.
And it had been probably a year or maybe two since I watched the second season of American Horror Story, which is a show that I really like, and I think its conceit is really interesting. But that's not for now.
So I would say, so definitely a recommendation if kind of like B-movie pulp, hard-boiled is another way I would explain, you know, an adjective I would throw. That. Like if that is kind of up your alley, don't let the whole Cinemax original series kind of deter you. So yes, you'll kind of get the grown-up naughty bits, but it is like relentlessly entertaining. The characters are cool and like worth like connecting with. I mean, like, you know, Hood isn't a great guy, but he is on a path of redemption, right? And he's worth rooting for.
And so, there is righteousness in this show where crimes that are committed are redeemed properly. And on another hand, you've got, not everything is black and white. Proctor is, in a sense, the first season's big bad, although it's really Rabbit.
Right,
But Proctor is what you call, in pro wrestling parlance, a tweener. So he's essentially a bad person. In almost every way, he's a bad person. But there's a sense where when his niece gets shunned from the Amish community, Rebecca, he gets righteous about that. He actually cares about the town. He actually cares about the community. He's just a piece of garbage.
And so they have their kind of perverted codes that they all
have. They have their codes. It's like in The Wire with Omar Little, a man's got to have a code.
Right. That's right.
Omar Little's not a good man, but Omar Little is an honorable man. And I think on a certain level, Proctor is an honorable man. Not always, but often enough that I don't hate him. I don't hate any of the characters in that show, not any who are still alive.
Right. That's right.
And that's a good hallmark of that show. And it's not just because they're righteous, it's because they're compelling.
That's right.
Although the final scene between Rebecca and Proctor, when he shows up, he comes out of the shower naked and she's just standing there. That all gets really weird.
That does get weird, and the weirdness does not ebb away from that. But anyway.
I don't doubt it. The show does not shy away from weirdness.
It does not. So Seasons 1, Season 2, definitely check them out. Season 1 you could probably have for cheap. The Blu-ray is a gorgeous looker.
So, it's good. It's nice.
It's real nice.
I will get this back to you.
Yes, and Daryl needs to return it to me.
I will this week. I will this week.
but yeah, so just so that is our little Banshee, kind of a Banshee endorsement. And I think we're going to call it a podcast, Daryl. I think our work here is done. I think we've covered – I think this is probably the most feminist Friday filibuster we've ever had. I mean, it was filthy with strong, independent, badass women.
It sure is. It sure is, and I love it.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, this is like – so we've had Noah, and then we've had Banshee.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. What's next? You'll have to wait.
Lord only knows.
That's right. All right, that is it. So thanks, Daryl. And tune in Friday Filibuster, DVDvert.com is the email. And we will see you guys soon. Bye-bye.